Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
It's unimaginable, the pain that you feel. I don't want the answer that they found Marshall's body. I don't want that. But not knowing what's happened to him, not knowing where he is, like, it's cold here right now. And I'd be like, what if he's out in the elements? Is he cold? Does he have food? That doesn't go away. And it shouldn't. He's my son. You know, we have no more answers than we had back then. And it's not because people aren't trying. I don't know why this happened. Someone knows something. Someone has to. And, you know, all we care about is that Marsha comes home. That's all we want. If he did need some time away, we just need to know he's safe. Because right now, we don't know.
On November 17th, 2019, 26-year-old Marshall Iwasa visited his mother in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. He helped her with some tech problems and then left late in the evening, despite his mother's pleas for him to stay the night. He told her that he was headed back to Calgary, where he had been renting a room from a local family and attending school. However, Marshall didn't go back to Calgary that night and has not been seen or heard from since. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 222 of The Vanished, Marshall Iwasa's story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Marshall was raised in the city of Lethbridge in Alberta, Canada. He has a sister, Paige, and they enjoyed a close relationship, often spending their time outside exploring what nature had to offer and traveling to new places that they wanted to see. Marshall and Paige remained close into adulthood, even after Paige had moved to Hawaii, and Marshall also left their native Lethbridge to study in Calgary, a city approximately 2 hours north of home. While we were working on this story, we first spoke to Paige, who shared with us how close she and Marshall were.
It's just the two of us. I guess we grew up in a small town in Lethbridge, Alberta. Until he moved over to Calgary, which is like a bigger city about 2 hours north of Lethbridge, to go to school a couple years ago. We grew up, we're the only siblings together. And so we were pretty close most of our childhood. And then we got even closer as we were adults. His personality is really easygoing, pretty quiet and shy, introverted. He's got a lot of friends that he made from like elementary or junior high that he stayed in contact with. So he's got a lot of friends from childhood. He likes to do a lot of outdoorsy things like hiking and being in the lakes and swimming. And then he got really into the gym right after high school. And he's been going to the gym ever since. So he built up like a good network of friends through the gym, and he was really active there. Me and him, we usually like to travel a lot together, mostly to Hawaii. I think that's like our number one place to go. We usually either go camping to the States together, or we would come and visit Hawaii for periods of time together. A few years ago, I moved to Hawaii, and he'd always come and visit, usually during Christmas.
While we were researching Marshall's disappearance, we found that there isn't much info about Marshall out there about his life prior to him going missing. So we asked his mom, Tammy, to tell us about Marshall growing up.
They're 3.5 years apart. Paige and Marshall, even when they're little, they would stand for each other. Paige was probably more aggressive than Marshall. And so, you know, Paige would tease Marshall and kind of, this is when they're really little, be mean to Marshall. And then Marshall, you know, loved Paige so much. And so after Paige had teased him and fighting with him, like siblings do, arguing and stuff, she'd say to Marshall, "Marshall, can I have your allowance?" And Marshall would give it to her. And as they grew up, they got even closer. Before Paige got married, Paige and Marshall took a month off and went to Hawaii, just the two of them. And, you know, that's where they got their first matching tattoo together. And the bond that they share is amazing. Like, it's so close. And their birthdays, Paige's birthday is December 27th. Marshall's birthday is January 3rd. So they have their birthdays very close together. Since Paige has moved to Hawaii, they spent every Christmas together and New Year together. So yeah, they are so close. And so as a mom, I'm so grateful for that. Marshall's always been a really gentle soul. Like, for instance, when he played football, and this was when he started when he was like 10, they had a city league. And Marshall was good because he was, you know, a strong kid. And he would go to practice, and then just after he started, he said to me, you know, I don't think I want to play football. And I said, why? I said, you're good at it, and why don't you want to play? And he said, I don't mind people hitting me and tackling me, but I don't want to tackle anyone. I don't want to hurt anyone. And that was when he was 10. Like, he has such an understanding of and awareness of, he just never wants to hurt anyone. When he was, oh God, I can't remember how old he was, but like a teenager, and we were driving, and he saw this bird that had gotten trapped in between two fence boards and was swaling around trying to free itself. And Marshall, because he is quiet and gentle and calm, he was able to lift the bird up from and free itself from the between the fence boards. Like, he just has that calmness, and he's easygoing. Paige borrowed Marshall's truck, and when he just got it, and she hit a bird, and, you know, it cracked the windshield, and Marshall said, well, you know, that's okay. Like, no big deal. And nothing got him upset or angry, because he was just that easygoing. Never wanted to make waves, but if he saw someone that needed help, he would always help them, whether it was family or strangers. There was one incident where a boy was being picked on, and Marshall got in between them. He just couldn't ignore when someone was being treated unfairly. And he put himself in harm's way. When we see something, we can either walk away or we can help. And he would always help. So that was just his nature. He had a group of friends, core friends, and they hung out, and just a typical teenager. We were looking for pictures where Marshall wasn't smiling, and there wasn't any. Like, he was just your typical kid. He didn't excessively party, but he, you know, had parties like teenagers do, and just your typical kid. I mean, around me, he was really quiet, but around his friends, he would laugh and stuff like that. Like, his laugh is infectious. And he, yeah, was just a good kid, like, not in trouble. You know, he's never been in trouble with the law. I mean, the only thing he's done is speeding tickets. But that's it. After high school, then he started, he did a lot of labor jobs because Marshall is really fit and strong. And so he worked for a number of labor jobs, like physical labor. And he, you know, moved in with his friends and stuff. So he was an independent adult.
We also spoke to Marshall's cousin by marriage, Cassie, and she told us about Marshall's life and personality from a different perspective.
So he's my husband's cousin, but we've been together about 15 years now. So I knew Marshall as a child, and he was just always a super laid back kid, like super quiet, but kind of just down for anything, like just a really chill personality, like almost his sister lived in Hawaii and he wasn't from Hawaii, but he kind of had that vibe about him, if that makes sense. So just, yeah, a super cool, just quiet, never got into trouble that we knew of or anything. So there's a few of them that they're more like siblings, I would say, than cousins. Like when you think of cousins, you don't always think that they're that close, but with this particular family, they're definitely super close to them. Like we went to Hawaii with them a couple years ago. We were just camping with them this past summer. Like they were just, yeah, more like siblings, I would say.
After high school, Marshall began working full time and wanted to pursue a career in computer technology. He moved to Calgary to attend the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, where he was working on a computer science-related degree. Marshall completed the fall 2018 and spring 2019 semesters, and was set to return again that fall. He told his family that he was enrolled in the fall 2019 semester, but it was later discovered that he was not, and it's believed that Marshall may have been working instead of attending school and had taken a semester off. This is what his sister Paige told us about Marshall's enrollment at the college.
He was supposed to have been enrolled in school, but we found out that he didn't enroll that semester. I don't know if he was working. He had never mentioned anything to me about working because he was supposed to have been in school. But given that he wasn't in school, we think he could have been looking for work or going to work just because of the types of work that he had done previously before getting enrolled in school were like manual labor type jobs, which he would be easily able to pick up and start another one, like find work. I know that he was really nervous about going back to school, and he hadn't been in school for a really long time, and he was nervous about the program. And so it could have been that it wasn't a good fit. I know a couple of times he had mentioned like he was going for computer programming, that sometimes in that field, like you don't need the degree, that you can just have the work experience. So it could have been like he didn't like school, didn't feel it was a good fit, changed his mind. Over the summer, he had said he was working remotely, not like a paid work experience. It was kind of like a, in my mind, I equate it like a practicum or an internship where it's unpaid work experience to get your foot into the field. And so he had been doing that over the summertime.
Marshall's cousin Cassie shared with us what she thought Marshall was up to while the family believed he was in school.
Well, we were all under the impression that he was going to school in Calgary. We had even, my husband had talked to him at, we had a family reunion and then we went camping this past summer and he had talked to him about school and yeah, everything, like we didn't really know what he was going to school for. We just knew it was something kind of above our heads with computers. So we just thought he was going to school for computers and whatever he was doing. But yes, living in Calgary, living in a basement suite, but didn't really have any red flags whatsoever. We were still under the impression that he was going to school until we got the phone call that something was wrong, basically. And then that's when the Calgary police told her that he had not been back to school that semester, which would have started in September. So he started in the fall of 2018 is when he moved that summer, 2018. So he did go to school for the fall semester. He did go to school for the spring semester. And then he never went back in September. So they were saying that he had dropped out at first, I think, is kind of what we thought. But then we realized that he just never went back. So that's where we were kind of concerned. My husband was thinking, well, I just talked to him about school in the summer. And he was saying that he was still in school. But when we found out he just never went back, we were thinking, well, maybe he did have full intention of going back and something changed. Right? Like maybe he wasn't lying to us at that point in the summer because school hadn't started yet.
We've all had moments where we chose not to share something with our relatives, and some people are just more reserved than others. We thought that maybe one of Marshall's friends could help us understand whether or not Marshall had enrolled in school that fall, or if he hadn't, what was he doing with his time? We thought it might be helpful to talk with someone outside of Marshall's family. So we spoke to his longtime friend, Marcus, who told us about Marshall and their friendship.
We just met through a mutual friend in high school in like grade 10, I think. Yeah, just friends of friends, and then had a couple classes together. He's quiet, but also if he's comfortable, he could be very outgoing. And I don't know, he's funny, very funny. He's very kind. Very, very private, though. He's a very private person. He keeps everything to himself. We would never lie, but he will tell, like, half-truths. He just likes to keep to himself, sort of. Well, half-truths isn't probably, like, the right. If it's not, like, concerning you, he just probably won't tell you. He went to school in September of 2018, and he moved out of my house and moved to Calgary. He only went for the one year, and then he never re-enrolled this year. But he wasn't really open to talking about it. And then if you would ask him, he would just kind of give you a vague answer. And I didn't really like to pry on stuff like that because I'm sure everyone else was prying. So I didn't really question him too much.
Marshall's mom had planned to make a trip to Calgary to visit Marshall. But he told her that he was going to be coming to Lethbridge anyway to get some of his technical equipment out of storage, and that he would visit her instead. On the evening of November 17th, 2019, Marshall drove the 2 hours from Calgary to Lethbridge. He stopped for a short visit with his mother and helped her with some computer problems that she was having. While speaking with Tammy, this is what she told us about the last time she saw or heard from her son.
Marshall got here late on Sunday, and that was the 17th. Then he was here for about an hour and a half. And because I don't know very much about computers and Marshall does, you know, I said, can you help me with this and with this one problem I'm having? And so, you know, we sat together at my kitchen table and he was helping me. You know, he wasn't in a rush. He wasn't super sad. He was just Marshall. He was just quiet and trying to help me. Like, Marshall is quiet. He's not a chatterbox, you know. And if Marshall would have been really talkative, that would have been a different. And, you know, I've gone back and tried to think, did he say anything, you know, that I've missed? And I can't think of anything. I can't think of any clues that maybe he was in trouble. I don't know. Well, it was getting late, right? And I had to work. And so then it's like 11:30. And, you know, I said, well, why don't you just stay? And he said, no, I got to go back up to Calgary. And then that was it. Like, our conversation was like our normal conversations. Marshall, I'm terrible for asking question after question. And I didn't want to do that because I didn't, you know, I just wanted Marshall to be here. I was so happy to see him.
After Marshall left his mother's house, he stayed in Lethbridge, heading to a storage unit that he and Paige shared. According to a news interview conducted with Marshall's cousin Cassie, Marshall arrived at the storage unit after they closed for the evening on Sunday night. Between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. on Monday, November 18th, Marshall tried several times to use his code to enter the storage facility, and finally entered just after 6 a.m., when the facility reopened. Cassie shared with the news reporter that according to the code boxes used to enter and exit the storage unit, Marshall was at the storage facility for just over 2 hours and exited around 8:30 a.m. Unfortunately, surveillance footage from the storage area was erased before Marshall's family even knew he was missing, so they only know when and for how long he was there. Marshall did not frequently go to the storage unit and had not been there since August. This is the last trace of Marshall. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After Marshall was reported missing, local police conducted a search of the storage unit and found nothing suspicious, while Marshall's family reported nothing missing or out of place. Why exactly Marshall spent the night at the facility instead of at his mom's house, and why he was there for so long after he was able to gain access, remains unclear. Paige explained what she knows about the storage unit.
Me and him have a shared storage unit together, and we know that he was there. That's how we knew that he logged in, that he was in Lethbridge. So we don't know if he was alone or with someone because there's no camera footage, but he used we have like a designated code together that he used to log in. We know for sure that was him. It's like a code to get in. I have gone to the storage unit. That was one of the first things I did when I went back to Lethbridge. I went through it with police.
With no surveillance footage of Marshall at the storage unit, Paige has a plea for nearby residents and business owners.
We received verification that Marshall was in Lethbridge November 18th in the industrial area on the north side around 8:30 a.m. and just asking people that are in that area if they have any footage or to check their cam or businesses in that area specifically to check their footage if they still have access to it.
At first, it wasn't strange to Marshall's family that he had been out of touch. Marshall's relatives told us that he often went without communication for several weeks or months at a time, consistent with his quiet, introspective nature. Marshall's phone was often out of minutes and required Wi-Fi to use, so Marshall often fell off the radar unintentionally. We also spoke to Marshall's cousin Catherine, and she told us that once Paige left Canada permanently, Marshall became more distant in his contact with family.
Once she moved away, that's when he branched off more and started doing his own thing. But then same thing, he'd come to some of our family dinners, but you know, he was kind of a hard character to get a hold of a lot of the times, even then. I don't know if it's just age. With his type of personality, it would not strike me as odd or weird that he would say, forget to pay it even, you know, and be like, oh yeah, shoot. And then it's not working. And then, oh yeah, it's not working. Oh, well, whatever. I'll get to it when I get to it. Most people, their lives would break down if, you know, like, oh crap, I don't have my phone. And he'd be like, yeah, whatever. I'll get to it when I get to it. I'll pay it when I pay it. And so most people are very much in a very connected social media kind of world. And he's just not. He would just do his own thing. He was comfortable with picking up jobs and, you know, working wherever he needed to. He was a hard worker, and all his employers will tell you this. Like, they all loved him. He was well-liked, and working was never an issue for him. He always had a lineup of jobs. He always had employers that would take him back in a heartbeat. Like, he always had that really, really good work ethic, and even just his character, too. You know, they loved him. He was such a likable person.
In the months prior to Marshall's disappearance, his sister Paige and her husband had noticed that Marshall wasn't keeping in contact with their family as much, even with his sometimes inconsistent contact. This wasn't necessarily out of character for Marshall, but as Paige reflected back on things, she told us that she had considered that something was off with her brother.
The thing that I noticed is, like, he hadn't been talking to us, me and my husband, as much. But we had thought that was because he was busy in school. But then when it came out that he wasn't in school, then it was like, okay, maybe he was avoiding talking to us because he didn't want to lie or wasn't ready to tell us that he wasn't in school anymore. He lived in a downstairs, like a basement suite in a house with a family upstairs. And they've been really helpful. They said that, you know, because I guess they share like a laundry area. So they would talk to him. He was really nice and they enjoyed him, and that he always paid his rent on time. He was quiet, like a good tenant downstairs. They didn't think that he returned to, like, what police have told us is they didn't think he returned to Calgary after he, like, left from Calgary to go see our mom in Lethbridge. His phone had been disconnected. I had been emailing him trying to get a hold of him to, like, make plans for Christmas, but he hadn't responded to my emails in about a month. That's why I was, like, asking my mom to, like, go up and, like, check in, see how he's doing, see what's going on, just because it was, like, odd. But when me and my husband were talking about what was going on, trying to figure out like what we could do before Marshall was missing, we had come to a couple ideas of like why maybe he was avoiding talking. And we thought maybe that he couldn't afford to come and visit us and didn't want us to pay for his stuff in December. So us having been students before, I've lived on like no money when I was a student. And, you know, we know it's really expensive. Right. And you're like totally strapped for cash. And so I live in Honolulu, and every Christmas for like, I think the last 5 years, we've spent it here. And so we typically, once he's been in school, we would just like pay for his stuff. So we like bought his flights up here last year. We bought his trip. Like, we went to the Big Island the year before and we bought that trip. So we would usually pay for it. But I think our guess was that like maybe he couldn't afford it, or he didn't want to take the money from us to get the trip. And so he was avoiding talking to us to tell us that, or like maybe he wanted to work during Christmas and was avoiding telling us that he didn't want to come or couldn't come. And then the other guess was like maybe that he wasn't in school, but that he wasn't ready to tell us. But we didn't know anything for certain, so we were just kind of like going with it. The other one too was that he was like really busy in finals or midterms, and he was just stressed out. When I get stressed out, I really disengage from like contacts and social media. And I think my brother was similar. When he was in school, even last year, he was harder to get in contact with than before, just because he would hunker down and like get into school zone. And I don't know if Marcus shared with you, but even when I would talk to Marcus trying to get a hold of him, like trying to figure out what's up with Marshall and just make sure he's okay, Marcus had let me know like, yeah, when he's in school, he just kind of goes into school mode, and it's even hard for him to sometimes get in contact with him. So it wasn't abnormal. Since this has all been happening, I've had time to like go through everything more thoroughly. I found text messages on my old phone, I think from like 2016 even. It would be like a month where I had been trying to get a hold of him, and then he'd like message me back saying like, hey, sorry, I was like in Saskatchewan in this certain area and there was no service. I've been really busy with work, but I should be coming home soon and like have time off. I think the most I looked at was 1 month, maybe a month and a half. where I'd be like, hey, what's going on? Are you okay? Like, what's up? And then he'd message me back just saying like, hey, I'm really sorry. I was at a place with no service. I've been working long.
About a week after Marshall had visited Lethbridge and made the short trip to his mom's house, his mom was on a trip to Hawaii to see Paige and spend some time with her family. While she was there, she and Paige received an alarming phone call. Here's Tammy.
I had planned a trip to Hawaii on the 22nd of November. I was leaving and Marshall knew that I was going to Hawaii. And so I went to Hawaii and then the Monday we got a call from the Pemberton RCMP that Marshall's truck was found torched. They said torched, like it was burnt to the ground. What they had to do because it was burnt out so badly is they take the VIN number and that matched up to Marshall.
Tammy and Paige were distraught by the news that Marshall's truck had been found when they didn't even know that he was missing. But there were more questions than simply where was Marshall? Why was his truck in another province? And in such a remote area, why was it burned? How did it get there? Where the truck was found was more than a 13-hour drive from where he was last seen in Lethbridge. If he had returned to Calgary, it still would have been more than 10 hours from there. When we spoke with Paige, we asked her to describe the area where the truck was found.
BC area is super wooded and lots of mountains and lots of really, really dense areas that are like backcountry bush kind of thing with trees and mountains. There's lots of wildlife out there. The area itself is like basically like people rent it, but I think it's like more for backpackers. So it's not like an Airbnb. It's a vacation. It's like for extreme backcountry kind of people. I think they're supposed to be like maybe a wood stove. They kind of do repairs. It's kind of like a shell. It's not insulated the heck. It sleeps like 30 people in sleeping bags. So there's not like cots or anything. So they kind of reserve it and rent it. It's like I think people go to this area in the wintertime. It's like really popular for like, I think backcountry skiing, maybe snowmobiling. The hut itself is close to a lake as well. So the way that you get there, it's like a service road. I think it was 15-kilometer drive up this service road and then 5 kilometers that's like really hard, rough 4x4. And then where the truck was found is the end of that. And then it's about a 2-hour hike to the hut that you can't drive up to. You have to hike it.
So Marshall's truck was found in British Columbia, just north of Pemberton at the trailhead that Paige mentioned. That if you were to hike the trail, it would have been about a 2-hour hike to this hut called the Brian Waddington Hut. In order to stay at the hut, you would have to register and pay online. Marshall's truck was found by a group of hikers who happened upon the truck on their way up to the hut. The registration logs for the hut were checked, and Marshall had not registered to be there during the time that he was missing. In fact, after checking the logs, he had never been there before.
I checked the bookings and he has never been there. The area between there and where we're from is so big and he's never really been in that area. It's not like a familiar thing. He was never really for like hiking and his adventures. He never really went alone for the hikes or alone to the camping spots that we go to. He usually would go with like friends. I mean, it's like a 13-hour drive from where our place was located to where the truck was found. There hasn't been any bank activity since like the 15th and no cell phone activity since the beginning of the month.
The RCMP in British Columbia was called out to come search the truck. But when they arrived, the pictures of the scene that Marshall's family had received from the hikers seemed to have changed, as though someone tried to organize the items scattered around the truck. Some things appeared to be missing completely, and the police search was odd in itself. Here's Paige with more.
I think the truck being burnt out was the scariest thing, and it made me think right away that like it had been stolen or something had happened. So I live in Honolulu. So I called around to Marshall's friends, tried to see if anyone had talked to him, and then filed the missing persons report, and then went and notified my family, and just started trying to see if like any of us could reach out to our networks to see if anyone had been in contact with him. But they hadn't talked to him recently. Basically across the board. So the last person to see him was our mom. on November 17th. So like no one had been in contact with him since then. And so that was concerning. And I think the biggest concern for me was how the truck was found. Because Marshall's gone away to work or has done things where he's been out of town for a while, like a couple weeks at a time or a month. We've been able to get a hold of him and he's always had like his items and his truck. So I think that was really weird how the truck was found, that it was burnt out and that a bunch of his items were thrown around. Where it found, it's not like even he would have just got out and someone would have been scoping him out. It's on a very, very remote location, 20 kilometers off of a main road, up like a 4x4 road. But the truck being found burnt and like where it is, he has no ties really to BC, especially to that area. It's not like an area that you can just Google Maps yourself and drive to it. Super remote and hard to get to. So I don't even know how his truck or he would have wound up there without, he doesn't know that area. I've talked to people that are like from Pemberton and like kind of are familiar with that area. And they say like you would need to know it. Like you would need to know how to find it in order to get there. Even if the car was stolen, I wouldn't think the first thing that they would do is drive it up this remote road and then burn it. The truck was completely burnt and like a bunch of his items were thrown outside and the passports were one of them, which I'm not surprised his passports were in his truck. That's not a surprising thing to me. The part of the scene of how kind of like chaotic it was that they were like thrown outside. It's just weird, like the amount of things that were like thrown out and not destroyed. There is some old phones, his broken laptop, clothes, a bunch of clothes. Not like all of his clothes, but like enough to go somewhere for like a week or so, or maybe even more, maybe even longer. We believe all of the phones were Marshall's. One of the ones we did find was like a super old one, though. The media probably doesn't have photos of it, but it was like really, really old. And like, I can't ever imagine him having that phone. Like, I don't remember him having that phone in his truck before. But Marshall is the kind of person that just like tossed things in his glove box sometimes or just like left them in his truck. So one or two of the cell phones, like I'm pretty sure are just his old broken ones that he had broke while at work or like somehow he had broken them over the years and they were just like chilling in his glove box. But I thought one of them was kind of odd. We did confirm it and tie it to him, but it's like pretty old, like 10 years old. So Marshall usually would like just buy the phones offline, like from Kijiji or like someone that already had the phone, it was already paid off. So when you break it, you don't send it to the carrier because you own it. So that part's not odd. It would just be like his old broken ones. It's not like there were multiple ones that were working. They were just like old ones with broken screens that he had busted them somehow. And he was notorious for like breaking things, electronics specifically. Like I know one of our old computers, we think that was one of the ones that was found. Like he had broken it. We had got it for him for Christmas. And I think it was like within a year or so, he might have accidentally dropped it or something. He just had like bad luck. We still haven't located his most recent laptop. We never located his phone, his most recent cell phone. We don't know for sure where the wallet is. Yeah, we haven't located it. They told me that the pinging was based on his like cell phone plan, but not if he had used his cell phone without a SIM card. So they were basing it on the plan. Like the plan, I guess it hadn't been used or something like that. It hadn't been pinged since early November, but he technically could have still used his phone by hooking up to Wi-Fi. His house still had his items in it. So the laptop that was found, we confirmed that it's Marshall's, but we think it's his old computer. It hadn't been used for a few years. The Xbox and PlayStation, originally I confirmed them to be Marshall's because he has them. But then when I went to his house in Calgary, his Xbox and PlayStation were in his house.
After the truck was found by hikers, the RCMP came in and conducted a search. Marshall's family doesn't agree with their conclusion that the scene was not suspicious and believes that the search and security of the scene should have been more thorough. Here's Marshall's cousin Catherine with more.
The truck in itself was not, it wasn't investigated properly to what I think, to what a lot of other people think. The way that they handled the whole truck in itself was very poor. You know, like there's a lot of things that we think they should have done and here nor there, maybe we don't know. Maybe we don't know what they even do, but what we think they should have done wasn't done and we're shocked by it. You know, just the fact that the truck is still sitting there and wasn't even, they never verified the cause of fire.
If you look at some of the early photos from the truck itself, there's like a flurry of snow, but barely any. Like you can see the ground, you can see the rocks, you can see debris around the truck, you can see things.
It was burnt to such an extreme that, yeah, like it's probably movies that you see that you think that things need to be done. Like as soon as you see something like that, you need to quarantine it, you know, you need to like have it all protected. You need it searched, you need it inspected thoroughly, like all these things you think isn't how things necessarily go. And it could just be dependent on who thinks it needs to be done or not even. Like we have early photos of the truck and it is so extremely torched, essentially. Just the severity of the truck in itself and to not even have a definitive answer of what had happened with it is really hard because, you know, they say it's highly unlikely, say it, like it was an electrical fire or engine fire or something like that. And, you know, most people we've talked to have said that an accelerant had to have been used. And yet here nor there, we're still sitting in a position where nothing has been verified to us of what had happened to the truck. There was about 3 weeks of optimal weather and then the weather rolled in. The weather in BC, it was pretty mild then. And that's why we were wanting to get out there right away. But because our RCMP had the jurisdiction of controlling the whole situation there, we weren't really allowed to do a lot of things that, you know, we had access to other drone teams. We had access to helicopter teams. We had access to the Search and Rescue BC, all of these outside sources that we were unable to utilize because they had just kind of started their investigation, which even then we understood that. You can't have a bunch of people trampling through the area, you know, in case something's going on. But you also need to be investigating it a little more seriously if something did go on. So it's not drivable. They had told us that if we wanted the truck out, we would have to helicopter it out because it's, you can't, I guess, for some reason they say there's no way that they could just tow it out of that area. It's like, in the simple fact that the truck is just sitting there, not even protected or anything, is like anyone could be rummaging in it, or, you know, who knows, there's punk kids everywhere that could be vandalizing it. And it's like, yeah, it's just sat there and there was nothing done to it to even start with. And so just the fact that they say that, I don't know, like everyone that I've ever talked to, anyone who's in these professional lines of work as well, it's ironic because they all say the same thing to me is, you don't find a truck like that where it's not suspicious. So I don't know why they didn't treat it that way.
After the truck and surrounding areas had been searched, Marshall's family hoped the police would start looking into things more thoroughly. In the province of Alberta, where Marshall lived, has a Missing Persons Act that allows police to obtain information about the missing individual. However, information shared with the family remains scarce. Marshall's mother explained that to us further.
In Canada, we have, it's a Missing Persons Act that is limited. It's made it impossible for Paige and I to get any information, and it makes it difficult for even the police to get information. I, like you, felt that, you know, the police go and they go to a bank and they say, I need Marshall's bank records because he's a missing person, and they release it. Or they go to Marshall's telephone, his cell phone provider, and say, I need a detailed account of Marshall's calls, who he called, who, all that stuff, and they'd give it to them. That's not how it works here.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices in premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Marshall Iwasa grew up in Lethbridge, one of the largest cities in the province of Alberta. According to Canada's census, approximately 117,000 people lived in Lethbridge in 2016. When we spoke to Marshall's cousin Catherine, she described for us a city in which she and her cousins grew up.
It's a smaller city. It's been relatively safe for, like, I've lived here almost all my life, and it's been a very safe, good city, and that's why me and my husband chose to stay and settle here. But the last couple of years, it's really shifted very, very, very fast. Even Stats Canada, it's, like, went from being not even on the radar to, like, number three most dangerous in all of Canada. And there's a couple of things I definitely link to it. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to pinpoint exactly what had happened. They opened a safe consumption site here in the city. It really became this hub of all of this area where all these people came. And what happens when you bring in the clientele for, you know, hard drugs is you bring in the gangs, you bring in those types of people as well. And we went from being a quiet city to all of a sudden exploded in this opioid crisis. And, you know, like fentanyl and everything, that it's like, I feel like we're super inadequate on how to handle it because we've never dealt with anything serious. And so you just all of a sudden, you get thrusted into this crazy life that Lethbridge has never, ever been through. We've always been a safe city. I rarely lock my doors. I know that sounds terrible, but I would rarely lock my doors. And now people in broad daylight are getting like home invasions every day. You know what I mean? And so it's crazy. Our city has changed. And I've explained that to even Paige, like, because this is her hometown too, but she's been away since everything unfolded. It's been like, it happened so rapidly, so quickly. And since she's been gone, even I was like, I've told her some things that have been happening in our city that no one's prepared for, because it literally came so fast. I'm like, there's no coincidence. Very dangerous. And so, like, my point of with everything, even with Marshall, is like, and you probably hear so many stories that you probably don't even think anything's far-fetched anymore. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you would say something and you're like, oh, that never happens. Things like that don't happen. And so I even said to her, I said, you know what's crazy is if I had said something to you like, yeah, maybe someone carjacked him here in the city and drove him somewhere, ditched him, and then continued their journey to BC, which is a huge hub for getting drugs. I'm like, that sounds like a crazy scenario, but very probable, because here in my city, it's happened. And it has happened. People are getting their, like, this one guy, he got kidnapped and he was forced to drive this guy to the safe consumption site, even around the city, and then even out to one of the nearby native reserves. And then he was kicked out of his own vehicle. And then he flagged down a car. And as he was flagging down another car to get help, this car had turned around, almost being like, oh no, maybe I should finish the job kind of thing. And then he luckily got into someone else's car and got help. And he was an older man, probably about 50. And it was traumatizing for him. And he released his story and saying that, yeah, this guy held him up and made him go on this crazy thing around the city. You'd think that's pretty ballsy to kidnap someone and make them do all these stops with you around the city. and then drove him out to his reserve and then ditched him there. And who knows what could have happened to him. And this is something that did happen and has happened and has happened to other people. Lots of us are fed up. We're fed up with the crisis going on in the city. We're fed up with the safety and everything. But it's so hard because how do you start over? Like my husband, how does he just pick up a new job somewhere else? And how do we leave all our friends and family that we do have here? You know, and so it is. It's really frustrating to see how our city has flipped so bad. And that's why even I was telling Paige, I'm like, you know what? With the Marshall scenario, like I have people who come and visit me from other cities that haven't been, say, to Lethbridge recently. And they'll do things that I used to do, you know, like you leave your car unlocked. You sometimes even leave your purse in your car, some silly things like that, you know, not to do, but you do it because it's relatively safe. And they're learning the hard way very quickly when they come back to the city that it's not the city it once was. And that's what worried me about Marshall is whatever he could have been doing or things like that, or even his trustworthy, like, you know, how like trusting he would have been even, or nonchalant he was. Could he have left his car running? Could he have been giving someone a ride or helping someone out? Or, you know, like, could he have just been wrong place at the wrong time with a lot of scenarios? And honestly, I can honestly say in this city of how it is now, anything could have happened. Or even been caught off guard, you know, because like I said, people are too trusting in the city that it's not what it used to be and getting caught off guard with things, you know.
According to Canada's Global News, Lethbridge was deemed the 15th most dangerous city in the nation of Canada's 2020 list of most dangerous places. Most of the crimes affecting Lethbridge included fraud and drug offenses, as well as burglaries, trafficking, and manufacture of illegal substances. Is it possible that Marshall found himself tangled up with the criminal element in the area? Or could he have fallen in with people unknown to his family while living a couple hours away in Calgary and attending school? His kind spirit may have been a vulnerability. There's also the possibility that Marshall left voluntarily, even though his truck being burned out seems like a clue that something bad happened. Catherine addressed this prospect as well.
Essentially, when they found the truck, I told her to get the ball rolling on filing the report. You know, she called me right away when she got the call from RCMP and, you know, been like, well, like, you don't want to rush to the immediate something bad. But like with his truck, you know, sometimes you think, oh, maybe someone stole his truck. But then you also go and realize that you haven't been able to get a hold of him. And that's the other big thing is time frames. If someone had stolen his truck, he probably would have contacted somebody about it, being like, yeah, like someone stole my truck and it's gone. And so, yeah, we filed it as quick as we could, at least, because the truck in itself was a really, you know, he was never away from his truck. That's the thing. He wouldn't have been like not knowing that something had happened to his truck. And we even ran through the whole scenarios of maybe he took a job somewhere and he doesn't even know his truck is stolen yet. But then there would have been some sort of other contact with him. So even if he didn't know his truck was stolen, he would have been in contact with his sister being like, okay, hey, I, you know, touched down wherever, I'm at a job. If you want to go missing on your own accord, then you have to notify law enforcement. And that's all you need to do, because then you can get in trouble for, say, public mischief or something along the lines of that for not, because you're wasting valuable resources on them trying to find you. And they don't need to disclose where you are, you know what I mean? Like, they don't need to say anything else other than, you know, you're alive. That's all you have to do is verify you're alive. And that is it. And, you know, then that can even put it in the family's hands from then hiring a PI and then taking the pressure off of local law enforcement, being like, okay, we don't need to be working on this anymore. And if the family really wants to pursue where this person disappeared to, they have to do it on their own accord. You know, kind of situation. There's so much, it just seems like there's lack of resources because there's so many people that go missing that I feel like they just think it's just another person.
When we spoke with Marshall's friend Marcus, we asked him what he thinks could have happened to Marshall.
I've spoken to a Lethbridge police officer and I spoke to the phone on it with a Calgary police officer. Just what kind of person Marshall was, if he had any business out there or like why he would be out there. Stuff like that. I feel like if Marshall did this on purpose, he wouldn't want to be found. He wouldn't come back. Yeah, maybe he ran away. Maybe something. I have no idea. I'm not sure. There's like so many questions with everything. and nothing seems like concrete at all.
Marshall's mom, Tammy, remains frustrated that the school won't share any information with their family about Marshall, or even seemingly with the police. They also won't allow posters of Marshall to be hung on their property, despite his prior enrollment there. We don't know why they won't allow the posters to be hung, but surely other students and even faculty at the school would recognize Marshall, and those people may have valuable information. This is what Tammy told us when we spoke with her.
I think that he wasn't exactly sure what he wanted to do. I think, you know, him going to school and exploring that avenue, you know, that was an avenue he went down. Now, I said, you're so brave to go back to school. I could never go back to school. And because he was out of it for quite a while, like, you know, so we went back as an older student, which would be very difficult if you haven't gone to school regularly. I think Marshall just wanted to find what gave him joy. And he was happy working physical jobs, but I think he realized he wanted more. And with Paige and Dawson both being highly educated, you know, I think he wanted to try that as well.
It's Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. It's SAIT. It's SAIT in Calgary. And he was in the IT program. What he was in is software development. So, and SAIT really has, because there's a program here in Lethbridge that he could have taken, but SAIT is more prestigious and it's a better certificate, I guess you could say.
Marshall is so proud. He just was not ready to tell me, even when he was here on the 17th, they don't give any information at all about students and things like that. I mean, Paige was the first person of contact, Marshall's emergency contact. They would not give her any information. I phoned in October that policy they have in place to protect the students is harming my son. SAIT will not allow posters of Marshall in their school, at their institution, that they won't allow posters up is unbelievable to me. You know, I don't know why they're taking that stand. You have a student who was enrolled in your institution and he's missing and you won't allow posters. I don't understand.
Marshall's sister Paige also expressed to us the concerns she has about the questions surrounding Marshall's school enrollment and what the family has learned since he disappeared.
We definitely thought he was enrolled. It wasn't until he was missing that we found out that he wasn't. That was something like we tried to kind of tackle head on by being transparent. Like, yeah, we thought he was, and like, we don't know exactly why he didn't tell us, but sometimes people just aren't ready to tell things for a little bit and they just need time. So I've tried getting in contact with SAIT, and I had tried like early on a few times getting in contact with him and I was always denied. And like the last time I called, I remember being like pretty frustrated and being like, look, I'm his listed emergency contact and he's missing. I don't understand like why I can't get any information. I'm not asking about his grades. I'm just asking like to try and get a hold of someone that might have known him a bit better. They still wouldn't release any information to me. But since then, my understanding is they've been releasing a little bit of information to Lethbridge Police. So they've been like helping them out, like cooperating, I guess, with them.
Paige has been working diligently along with the rest of Marshall's family to bring him home. The case has brought them in contact with several law enforcement agencies, including the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who came to the site of the burned truck, the Calgary Police, who became involved because that's where Marshall was living, and the Lethbridge Police, who have taken the reins of the case, as Lethbridge was the last place where Marshall was seen. However, despite the changing of hands, Marshall's family remains optimistic about the police investigation. Here's Paige.
This one is a really unique case, in my opinion, because like it started off, the truck was found under BC RCMP jurisdiction. I reported him missing to Calgary Police Service, and then Lethbridge Police Service is the one that has a case now because that's where he was last seen. So it's kind of like three different sections trying to work together. So the RCMP was in British Columbia that called me. in that province, but I filed the missing persons report with Calgary City Police in Alberta because that's where my brother was living. They're still involved. So they originally held the case. And then I think it was in December. I don't know the exact date in December. The file was transferred over to Lethbridge City Police in Alberta because that was where Mars was last seen. And RCMP in British Columbia were the ones that conducted all of the ground search. They did everything. They did an underwater search because there was a small creek. They did helicopters and dogs and ground search for multiple days. I think it was like 5 or 7 days. The Pemberton RCMP were the ones that conducted that. I think they looked into a couple things depending on, like, you know, if a tip came in and it was like in their area, then they've been working together with like Lethbridge to kind of investigate the tip or follow up on the tip and then get back to Lethbridge. And so now I don't think Calgary is really as involved. I think the police in that department would be like tasked with something if it was to like look into Calgary area, but mostly Lethbridge is taking the lead of this case. I'm in contact with the assigned detective and he does update me on like what they're looking into and what they're doing. And they are working on it. I can sense that it's like frustrating even on their end to still not have answers. And that would be difficult. I get it. And it's hard for us to not have any answers or movement. So I do feel like they're working on it. It's just we're trying to get other ideas of what could have happened, what could be going on, why the scene is so strange, why everything doesn't make sense.
Despite misgivings early on, Marshall's mom, Tammy, is also pleased with the direction in which the law enforcement investigation is headed now. This is what she told us.
I am absolutely impressed with the officer that is working directly with us. Has Marshall's picture posted. He has Marshall's picture at his home. Like, I know that he's doing his best. And I think I feel bad for, I mean, the police have thick skin and they have to. But us as general public don't understand it. Just looks like the police are doing nothing. But that is far from the truth. And, you know, I do want to have that out there that the Lethbridge police here is on top of this. And they are following any leads. But we are dealing with such a mass. We have no idea where Marshall is. He needs to focus on finding Marshall and following up on leads. And they cannot give us half information. I don't even want that. As a mom, I want them to focus on finding Marshall. I'm not a police officer, so I don't know how it works. But I do know that he is trying. And it's ongoing investigation, so they're not going to give out details, and they shouldn't.
While it hasn't been many years since Marshall disappeared, like so many of the cases we cover on the show, it's still been an excruciatingly painful time for Marshall's family. One of the things his cousin Catherine struggles with is how someone can disappear in the surveillance era we live in and not be found quickly.
For someone to just disappear with, you know, how many cameras and surveillance and all these things that track you and your phone and this and that. It's like, it's a complete shock. And it's scary. It's very scary because I think of my children and I'm like, I just don't understand how this happens. I don't understand how there's not more that can be done or is being done even for both ways. You know, like sometimes I get so angry being like, you know, why is this and this and this not being done? But sometimes it's a simple, there's not enough resources for it.
It's like if someone deliberately set it on fire, you probably would have needed jerry cans. And even then, you would have needed to fill up with gas. And at some gas station, you would have been filling up some jerry cans. And even then with the gas stations, yet again, if they could have, like, it was the one variable in this whole situation that was this constant thing that you know would have happened. He would have had to have filled his truck up at least twice to get there. And that's a certain. And that was the only thing that we do know. If they could have even got him on one surveillance anywhere, that would have narrowed out so much. It would have pinpointed a route. It would have even just simply said if it was even him, and then we can narrow our search even more. You know, like it just gives you your area and you close in on it when you know more details. And something as simple as one video surveillance, and we put it out there publicly telling like gas stations to take it upon themselves. We offered a reward. We tried to have some sort of incentive for people to take it upon themselves to do this because, like I said, it would have only been a very small few days span
of when he could have gotten gas, you know, from the time he left our city in Lethbridge to when the truck was found, it was only a few days. It wouldn't have taken much to, you know, look over surveillance for a few days and just spot his truck, whether he was with it or not. But that would have given us so many answers. And at least just right off there, if he was even in BC, then we'd be like, okay, yeah, maybe he was going to BC for something. Maybe he was going to a job. We do know he is good at picking up jobs, but we don't, you know, we have nothing.
So what happened to Marshall Iwasa in the 7 days since he was last spotted in Lethbridge, and the day his truck was found completely burnt out in a remote part of Pemberton, British Columbia, more than 13 hours away? One strange thing about where Marshall's truck was found is that directions to the location are not available on GPS systems or Google Maps, and his family does not think that Marshall was even aware of the area. To get to where his truck was found, it was about 13 kilometers or 8 miles on a gravel road once you got off the main road, and then it turns into a logging road for several more miles that is only accessible with four-wheel drive. At the scene where his truck was found, they also found 3 phones, a laptop, a PlayStation console, and an Xbox console. They have confirmed that the laptop and one of the phones were old devices that belonged to Marshall. The other 2 phones could be old phones of his, but they have not been confirmed. Initially, they believed that the video game consoles were Marshall's as well, since he was known to own them. But when they went to his home, they found his video game consoles. It's unknown who the PlayStation and Xbox belonged to. There are also items that appear to be missing that weren't found with the truck or in his home. He had a Samsung Galaxy phone that he was using at the time, a backpack, a Samsung laptop, and his wallet. Looking into the activity on Marshall's bank account and phone records hasn't led them to any answers. His last transactions and calls are from before he disappeared. What led Marshall to such a remote area? Was Marshall even there? Or did someone familiar with the area take his truck there and burn it? Was Marshall dealing with some personal problems that he didn't want to burden his family with? Why hadn't he been enrolled in school that semester when his family believed that he was? Is there a simple explanation, like he wanted to work, or the school hadn't let him enroll? One strange aspect of Marshall's case is him going to the storage facility after he visited his mom. What was he doing there? It was closed when he arrived, and he tried several times to get in between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. He was finally allowed to enter with his code the following morning around 6 a.m. and stayed there until 8:30 a.m. What was he doing all of that time? Was he picking things up or leaving items? Some have asked if Marshall could have gone to that remote area to camp or live off the grid, but his family thinks this is unlikely because when he visited the storage facility, there were camping supplies that would have been useful, like a tent and a camping stove. Did someone want to harm Marshall and went to great lengths to conceal his truck? In just under 6 months, Marshall's family has had to face all these questions with no answers. They are hopeful that someone will come forward who knew Marshall or saw him and be able to help them fill in some of the blanks in this story. At the time of his disappearance, Marshall Iwasa was 26 years old. He was 5 foot 11 inches tall and weighs around 170 pounds. He has brown shoulder-length hair and brown eyes. If you have any information about the disappearance of Marshall Iwasa, please call the Lethbridge Police Department at 403-328-4444. You can also call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. Additionally, you may leave a tip at p3tips.com. You can follow Marshall's story on Facebook at Find Marshall Iwasa.
Everything that you think happens in the movies when someone goes missing is not how it is in real life, and that's what's been very difficult on us, is that, you know, it really does seem like it's a lack of resources, and it is a lot harder to dig in to finding out what happened to somebody. I guess we're going into a lot of these things, you're going into it blindly of knowing you're looking for things, but how you will react if you do find something is definitely something that you're you try to mentally prepare for, but you can never know what that feeling would be unless it happens. So you definitely don't want to rule anything out. Like, anybody can be going through anything, and sometimes, you know, sometimes things can happen out of nowhere and you just don't know what someone is going through. And it doesn't matter how close you are to someone, things happen. We will not rule out anything. We don't really have any concrete anything to say what has happened, whether it was even just like his own personal things he's going through. We have nothing to say that it's him. It has nothing to say it's someone else. It has nothing to say about anything, just simply that he's gone and we have no answers. Like, it's just, you have his truck that ended up there and there's like, we have no surveillance of him from here to there. And it's such a big stretch. It blows my mind. Like, we know that there is surveillance somewhere, was at least. We just have so much that we don't know. And it's very, very hard. And I'm sure anyone else in this situation, the not knowing is just a terrible feeling, because you just stew over it and you think of all the scenarios and you don't know how to feel. Some days you have your breakdown days where it's hard and you feel terrible and you feel so sad, and you hope that he knew he was loved or knows he's loved. But then, you know, your mind races in all different directions and you don't really know what is going on. And it's a really hard feeling to not know anything.
That brings us to the end of episode 222. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Utah. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.